You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Susie Esmond wears lots of hats. She's a wife, a stepmom, a perimenopausal woman, a comedian, and a dog owner. But can she offer meaningful advice on coping with any of those roles? Well, she's not sure, but that doesn't stop her from addressing all of them in her new book called What Would Susie Say? Miss Esmond was a very successful stand-up comedian in New York before she was recruited to play the foul-mouthed Susie Green on Larry David's HBO series Curb Your Enthusiasm. Her book is published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased that it brings her to our show today. Hello, Susie.
Thank you, Lenny. I'm happy to be here following Nobel Prize winners.
Well, you'll win a prize someday, Susie.
Hopefully, you know, but not the Nobel. No, Emmy, an Oscar, one of those.
You could be as foul-mouthed as you want on HBO, but unfortunately, FCC rules prevent me from even reading the subtitle of your book.
I know. That's okay.
Your life has changed a lot over the past several years. When we used to do back-to-back shows on cablevision, did you imagine that you'd wind up living in upstate New York looking after four teenagers?
You know, see, I met Jimmy, my husband. I met him 6 years ago, right after Thanksgiving. So 6 years ago, to this day, I was living in a rent-stabilized apartment, one-bedroom apartment on the Upper West Side, and I had a dog.
And you gave up a rent-controlled apartment on the Upper West Side?
Well, no, I didn't give it up. I wouldn't have given it up.
To move to Albany?
I was illegally subletting, and my super died. And that, you know, because I used to smear him like crazy. And then the new super came in and ratted me out. And one day there was a knock on the door, and it was the marshals. Wow. After 14 years of $800 a month for a huge one-bedroom with an eating kitchen, I was not happy. But anyway, so that was 6 years ago, and you know, now I have two dogs and four children and a house in the suburbs and two cars and a husband.
And you also maintain a place here in New York.
Yes.
Do you mind traveling to Los Angeles to shoot the series, considering the fact that you have Albany and New York already?
Yeah, I don't really mind just because I love my job, and as long as Larry keeps on giving me such funny stuff to do, I'm happy to go there. Yeah, and usually we shoot like in the middle of winter, so around February, thinking, I'll go to Santa Monica for a week, that's okay.
But you wouldn't consider moving there?
No, I've never moved there, I never will move there. And my fantasy is to have a show here in New York, but that hasn't happened so far.
Before you married, did you see yourself as becoming a wife or a mother, for that matter?
No. You know, it's like, be careful what you wish for. In my case, it was be careful what you don't wish for. I never wanted kids. I never wanted to get married. I met Jimmy. I thought we were going to have a fling. And now I have four teenagers. So, you know.
How old were they when you met?
When I met them, they were 10 to 15.
So, and kids at that age really don't welcome the new mom.
No, I bought their love, Lenny. I bought. My brother would say to me, you can't buy their love. No, you can. Uh-huh.
And you're also on television a lot. That must give you some respect in their eyes.
Well, no, I'm nothing to them. You know, I mean, it was interesting. You know, when you're a parent of teen, like I'm sure Bruce Springsteen's kids or Andre Agassi was there, I'm sure their kids just roll their eyes at them too. I mean, when you have teenagers, you're not cool. I thought I was so cool. I work in nightclubs. I'm on an HBO show where I curse and blah, blah. I was in the car with Cindy, my little one, a couple of months ago, and Fergie comes on the radio. And she's like, oh, Fergie, I love Fergie, turn it up. And I say, just making conversation, oh, Fergie, didn't she used to sing with the Black Eyed Chili Peppers? Now, this was the funniest thing she ever heard, and she's rolling her eyes at me. And then I think back to like 35 years before when my mother would say things to me like, isn't that Paul McCartney on the Rolling Stones? And I would think, what an idiot she is. And now I'm that idiot. You know what I mean? It all comes around.
Can you be a strict disciplinarian when you're the stepmom?
Yes, I can be. I'm actually stricter than my husband is. Because ultimately, I feel like they need and want boundaries, teenagers, even though they rebel against it. They seem to crave it, and at least mine do. So I'm strict, actually. I'm quite strict. And it's not a role I ever wanted. You know what it's like to be a parent. It's not easy.
I know. long before you had kids to look after, you kept dogs, as you said.
Yes.
Why is the Shih Tzu your favorite breed? And I just realized I'm not sure I can even say that.
Yes,
name
you
on
can.
Air.
Shih Tzu.
Shih Tzu.
It's a Shih Tzu.
Oh, I've been saying it wrong all these years.
I love Shih Tzus because, they were bred to sit on the laps of emperors. And they're I call them the Buddha dog. They're mellow. They're small. They're hypoallergenic. They're not yippy. They're not like, you know, they're just mellow, cool. You know, they're people dogs. And they like people better than other animals. They're opposite of me. My dog likes people better than dogs. I like dogs better than people. So we're opposite like that.
And you're right that you don't cook for yourself, your husband, your stepchildren, but you will cook for your dog.
For my dog, I become Mario Batali. Yeah.
Is that because he's the only one who appreciates your cooking?
My stepchildren and my husband, they could cook for themselves. But he can't cook for himself. You know, he's got to have somebody that's the thing about animals, why we have to take care of them. They can't speak for themselves. They can't care for themselves. We have to be their voice. And we have to think we know what they're feeling when really we have no idea. I think he loves me and I rescued him and is grateful to me. And all of that is nonsense. He's the most manipulative creature on this entire earth. He knows how to look at me to get exactly what he wants, and I cook for him. He's really good at it.
You ever see that New Yorker cartoon where this woman is coming home, and the dog is at the door, and he's greeting her, and the balloon over her head is a heart, and the balloon over his head is a can of dog food?
Yeah, it's Alpo. Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. That's all they think about. But they've evolved as, you know, they've evolved in an incredible way to understand how to manipulate humans.
You've come out as a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Do you prepare meat for your dog?
Yes, he's a meat eater. Yeah.
So you don't feel
bad about
that?
Well, I don't like to touch it. You know, I don't like to judge his choice to eat meat. You know, I'm tolerant in that way. My husband eats meat, and that's fine. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to impose my morality or my value. You know what? It's actually my thing about not eating meat is not a moral thing. It's a visceral thing. In the same way that I don't want to make assumptions, but I'm going to assume that you wouldn't eat dog because it would be repulsive to you, perhaps.
It depends on the situation.
Or the breed,
yeah.
Maybe.
And where I am at the time.
Right. So that's how I feel about,
you know,
eating meat.
If I'm in some foreign country and the host brings out dog, I don't know. I might have to eat some. No,
I wouldn't. But psychosomatic.
Yeah, but you wouldn't eat cow either.
I wouldn't eat cow. Yeah, or chicken. The feet on the chicken bother me.
Well, I love chicken feet.
Yeah.
You advise women that they can tell a lot about a man based on the type of dog that he owns.
Right.
So what about the owner of a Shar Pei, for example?
Shar Pei is great if you've got a little cellulite. You know, a Shar Pei, if you find a guy with a Shar Pei, he's not going to mind if you have a little cellulite. It's much cheaper to get a dog than to do the liposuction. So I think that's a good thing.
And Great Dane?
Great Dane narcissist. Never really see you. All about them and their long legs and their big heads.
A miniature poodle?
Miniature poodle, that's a good... If you could find a hetero guy with a miniature poodle or a Shih Tzu or a Yorkie, that is a keeper.
I just have a golden doodle.
A golden doodle, I don't know, but with the guy with
you
the little
know?
Dog, golden doodle, I don't know the mixes. I only studied pedigrees.
It's a golden and a poodle.
I know what it is, but I don't know what, you know, the goldens, by the way, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Follow-through problems. Good for a make-out, but follow-through problems.
What are some of the other dogs that you have to be wary of?
You know, Dalmatian, he'll tell you it's an allergic reaction. Herpes. Don't go there. Spent way too much time at the sniffing post.
And what if a man owns cats, if he's a cat?
Aloof,
lover?
Aloof.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. You know what's interesting? I played a cat in an animated Disney movie called Bolt. I played Mittens the cat. And I did a little showing for my nephew's fifth grade class. And they were all asking me questions, you know, did a little screening and Q&A, and all the kids were asking me things like, do you like cats? And I was like, no, I don't like cats, I like dogs. Well, then why didn't you play the dog? Because they gave me the part of the cat, John Travolta, play the dog. Well, why didn't you call him up and ask him if you could switch parts? You know, this is how the 8-year-olds think. It was very cute.
You've said that if you could be reincarnated as anything, you would be a Shih Tzu for an older gay couple.
Oh, yeah. With no children, an older gay couple with no children, because then you would just be, you know, you'd be treated, you'd be king of the world. It would be incredible.
My guest is Susie Essman, who's written a book called What Would Susie Say? And then there's an expletive deleted word, Wisdom About Love, Life, and Comedy. It's published by Simon & Schuster. You've talked about loving New York street life.
We are.
Yeah, look out there. I mean, there's a woman who's looking in.
What's
this is
not
the first...
to love about that view right out there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
a moving
why,
van with a
you
desk.
Know, you asked why a thing about moving to L.A. You know, when you're in L.A., you're extremely isolated, and you tend to just be with your own socioeconomic group. You're in the neighborhood that you live in, and you drive wherever you're going. And unless you're, you know, with a waiter or a waitress who's usually an actor or director wannabe, you don't deal with anybody who's different from you. And I'm a streetwalker, not that kind, you know, the other kind.
A pedestrian.
You know, a pedestrian. I love to walk the streets of Manhattan and just explore. I've lived here for so many years, and there's blocks I've still never been on. Which I just think is just, you know, it's never-ending visual array of things to see here.
Can we talk a bit about your comedy career? There weren't as many women in comedy when you
Correct.
Were trying to break into the scene.
Still aren't.
Fewer, but there are some prominent women, and have been, going all the way back to Joan Rivers and some others. Was this something you always wanted to do? Were you the class clown?
No, I wanted to be a comedic actress. I wanted to be, you know, like Carol Burnett or Rosemarie on the Dick Van Dyke Show. I thought that was like, you know, wow, she's a, you know, a comedy writer. I didn't want to be the Laura Petrie because she was like the housewife at home, whereas Rosemarie, she was like, you know, in there doing it and being creative, and that kind of appealed
saying
to me.
Saying witty things that
saying
other
witty
people
things,
wrote for her.
Exactly. She didn't get the guy. That's true. You know. But Laura had, you know, Rob, who cared? So, but I wanted to be a comedic actress. It never occurred to me to do stand-up. When I was a kid and I would see the comics on Ed Sullivan, I had, even though I thought they were funny, I had no connection to that. That they stood up there and they told jokes, had no idea how to write a joke. And it wasn't until I actually got on stage that I actually understood what stand-up comedy was all about. And the friends forced me to do it.
Well, you're friends with Joy Behar. Did she give you any advice?
Well, I became friends with Joy after we met doing stand-up. We were both starting around the same time.
Now, when you started, there were people like Andrew Dice Clay, rather sexist comedians. I don't know what's happened to him. I hope that the fact
Sad
that he's
that
disappeared
his career,
reflects changes in our attitude about male-female relationships. But were you running into problems with some of the other comedians because you were a woman?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because comedy, stand-up comedy, not in the television business, but in the club business, is relatively egalitarian because if you're funny, a club owner is going to put you on. And I always found it was more difficult for a female comic than a male comic, and you had to be that much better, which was fine with me. I kind of hate crybaby victimness, and you know, people would say, well, it's easier for a mediocre man than a mediocre woman. Well, who wants to be mediocre? You know, I just decided, I saw how hard it was, and I just decided I was going to be so good that they couldn't deny me. And that was a motivating force for me, and it really was the case. I had to be so much better than my male counterparts, which was fine.
Well, many years ago, it was Lenny Bruce who inspired, and then around the time you came along, it was Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor was
who must have been the funniest man alive until he destroyed his own life.
I think so, yeah. I mean, when I first saw his first concert album, I thought that's what I wanted to be because I grew up watching these comedians tell jokes, you know, and Richard Pryor was out there just opening up his soul, you know, and so vulnerable and so accessible and so he told stories and he did characters and he told jokes and he was just raw. He was just raw and funny. It wasn't like feel sorry for me. It was laugh at me with me.
Although he also did say words that we can't say on the air and in Curb Your Enthusiasm. You play Susie Green, the wife of Larry David's friend Jeff Green,
Jeff Garland.
Profanity is so ingrained in Susie that I can't say her signature line on the air. Do you curse a lot in real life?
No, that's a character I created. You know, I mean, unless you push me. Don't push me, I'll go Susie Green on you. But you know, it's interesting that people always respond to her language, and I don't think that's the thing that she taps into with people. I think what she taps into with people is her complete and total comfort with her anger. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that she's so comfortable in her anger and she's so reactive is what people respond. And, you know, I'm on this book tour now. It's just in St. Louis and Chicago and L.A., and women come up to me all over the country and tell me that I'm their idol, that they wish they could speak to their husbands the way that I speak to my husband. And I'm thinking, like, there's, like, angry women all over the place that hate their husbands and want to yell and scream at them and feel they can't.
She also reveals that anger through the outfits that she wears, those loud animal print outfits. But I wonder about you as a vegetarian. I mean, you're wearing these animal print outfits.
Yeah, well, they're not real animals. It's called, you know, textile, Lenny. But, you know,
see,
it's interesting.
That's a secret
her outfits
of TV.
Are an important part of the character because when I created her, it was this woman who has complete and total confidence. You know, you meet these women and they're so, or men, whatever, and you know, not always the brightest. Totally confident. She lives by a set of rules. She thinks she dresses incredibly. She never doubts her taste. Me, Susie Essman, doubts everything and analyzes everything, and it's a completely... So I don't want to play myself. I wanted to play this kind of character that was so different from me that would be fun to play.
How scripted is that show? Are you?
It's not scripted at
all. So you're really ad-libbing most of it based on some kind of outline?
Yeah, there's an outline. Actually, I have a whole chapter in the book about chapter 15... is all about the whole curb process and a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. There's approximately a 7-page outline, and each scene has a paragraph of what the scene is about. No dialogue is written at all, unless there's a piece of dialogue that's necessary for the story. I mean, Larry is all about story. His whole thing is each scene moves the story forward, and that's why it's easy. It writes itself. Because if I know what the scene is about, I know what my character is, I know my relationship to the other characters... Then we just go.
And you also remember your history over 7 seasons.
That's
because
right.
You're the one who created that history
right.
to some degree. Is the same true for Larry David? Is he playing an exaggerated character, or is the Curb character really like him, as most people suspect?
None of us are who you think we are. None of us, we're all playing...
I'm relieved.
But there's a conceit of the show that Larry, it's Larry David, and then there's all these people, like Ted Danson comes on and plays Ted Danson, but that's not really Ted Danson. That's Ted Danson playing Ted Danson on Curb Your Enthusiasm playing... It's like, remember on the Lucy show when, like, she would have... Well, who was it? Who was in Sunset Boulevard?
Gloria Swanson.
No, the actor.
Bill
William
Holden.
Holden. William Holden would come on... You know, and play William Holden on the Lucy. That wasn't really how William Holden really was, you know. So that's what the show is. So Larry always tells me he aspires to be that character. that character, you know, says what he's thinking, but he knows better than to say.
So is the Susie Essman that we find in this book the real Susie Essman? Or
yeah.
Is this the person you aspire to be?
Both, I suppose. But I was very careful to be as authentic and honest and revealing... You know, part of it is memoir about all my early years in stand-up, and part of it is, I mean, there's everything in there, from my father's death to my love of the Yankees to being a stepmother to, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm. So there's a lot. I put a lot into it. I poured my heart out into the book.
And the book is called What Would Susie Say? It is published by Simon & Schuster. And I want to thank you so much for being with us here live at
it's
the Jerome
fun.
L. Green Space. Susie Essman.
It's great here. Every day.